It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, the first day of our summer series, Iowa at Work. Mondays throughout this month, we'll be focusing on different aspects of jobs and working here in Iowa, as the title indicates. On both of our talk shows, Talk of Iowa with Charity Nebbe and here on River to River with me, Ben Kiefer, this hour we'll focus on the minimum wage and low wages and the debate surrounding it. Currently, the minimum wage nationally and here in Iowa is $7.25, and it's been nearly 6 years since the federal government last raised the federal minimum wage for low-income workers. That's a long period of time to go without a raise relative to the rate of inflation. Though, even though certain cities and states do have higher minimum wage rates, the debate over raising the minimum wage on the federal level for potentially millions of workers is gaining steam. And a minimum wage boost would most directly impact low-income workers and advocates say help move them toward a living wage. This hour, we want to ask a number of questions. Who's making the minimum wage? What's it like to live on low wages? What about the immigrant workers? How do they fit into the picture? What about wage theft? And what would be the impact of a statewide raise in the minimum wage? And some historical context here as well. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Do you make minimum wage or a low wage? Give us an idea, a snapshot of your low wage situation so we can better understand what it's like to earn $9, $10, $11 an hour or the minimum, $7.25, and perhaps even try to raise a family on that. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. David Cooper joins us this first half hour, economic analyst at the Economic Policy Institute. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
We want you to give us, I don't know if it's a 30,000-foot view to start off with, but sure. Give us an idea of minimum and low-wage working in Iowa and the Midwest. Who's making the minimum wage and low wages here?
Sure. So there's kind of a distinction I like to make, first of all. We can talk about minimum wage workers, and then low-wage workers is sort of a slightly separate category. Oftentimes you hear folks talk about minimum wage workers, and in reality they're pointing to folks that are making exactly the federal minimum wage or less than it, because you actually can make less than minimum wage if you're a youth or someone in a training program or if your employer well, there's a number of other categories that don't fall under the minimum wage. But if we look at just those folks that are making minimum wage in Iowa, it's a relatively small group. It's about 50,000 workers as of the last tally, or about 5% of Iowa workers are making exactly the federal minimum wage or less. And that group tends to be fairly young, a lot of teenagers and folks getting their first job, et cetera. And this is what you hear as sort of the stereotype of all low-wage workers. The reality is that if you start looking at folks that are making just a little bit more than minimum wage, you start to see that picture change a lot. And so oftentimes when we talk about the minimum wage and who it affects, we think it's important to look at not just those folks that are making minimum wage, but those folks that are making a little bit more. You know, some of the recent proposals to raise the minimum wage, both at the state and at the federal level, have been looking at wages in the $9, $10, and more recently even a $12 proposal. And if you look at the folks that are making, say, between $7.25 and $10 an hour, the picture changes a lot. Like I said, those folks tend to be a lot older. Only about 12% of the folks nationally making less than $10 an hour, roughly, are teenagers. Many of them have families. About a quarter of the workers making less than $10 an hour have children. Most of them are working full-time, so this isn't just teens working after school. And they're trying to support families, like I said, on very low earnings. And so, you know, for those folks, the minimum wage is really a big issue because it's their bread and butter. It's their, it's the folks that are, this is their paycheck that they're taking home each
mm-hmm.
week.
Mm-hmm. How does Iowa compare with other Midwestern states? Because Iowa mirrors the federal minimum wage, but I know some of our surrounding states have higher state minimum wages, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Illinois has the Illinois minimum wage is $8.25. Ohio is about $8.10 right now, and it will go up next year. Some of the other states in the area are a little bit higher as well. I mean, this right now we have 29 states plus the District of Columbia that have minimum wages above the federal $7.25. So Iowa is in the minority at this point.
Mm-hmm. You've looked at raising the federal minimum wage to $12 by 2020. Why that number by 2020? What have you looked at and why?
Sure. So as I said, there's been a number of proposals in the last few years about the federal minimum wage. And the most recent one was a proposal that was put forward earlier this year by Senator Patty Murray and Representative Bobby Scott that wanted to raise the federal minimum wage to $12 by 2020 in five steps. And they chose $12 because that essentially restores the minimum wage to the value that it had in the late 1960s as a percentage of the typical worker's wage. So basically, if we look at the minimum wage back in the late 1960s and just adjust for inflation, it was close to $10 an hour at that time, at its high point in 1968. But also at that time, it was equal to about just over half of the average wage of the typical worker. So a minimum wage worker was making about half of what a typical worker was making. If we raise the minimum wage to $12 by 2020, that's going to bring the wage floor back up to that same relative position. It's going to take the minimum wage back up to just over half of what the typical worker in the United States is making. In effect, that's going to reduce that growth in inequality that's taken place over the last 40 years between low-wage workers and typical workers. And what we find is that if we were to do that, if we raise the federal minimum wage to $12 by 2020, we'd be lifting wages for about 35 million workers throughout the country. That's about a quarter of the U.S. workforce. So that's a pretty significant increase.
Mm-hmm. I was just reading a new Quinnipiac poll that came out this morning, actually. This is a highly partisan issue, isn't it? Likely Republican caucus participants, speaking of the Iowa caucuses coming up early next year, Republicans, caucus goers, 70% to 25% say that the federal government should not undertake efforts to reduce the income gap between wealthy and the rest of the population. And I know the minimum wage is only one lever in that whole mechanism. By comparison, listen to this, Democrats by 91% to 6%. Democrats in Iowa say the government should take measures to reduce inequality. I say that because you talked about equality there, David.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, this is something that gets lost sometimes when we talk about inequality. We hear a lot of politicians talking about inequality, but you know, really what they're talking about is wages, because the vast majority of Americans get their income from wages. So if you want to do something about inequality, you have to raise people's wages. And the fact is that over the last 40 years, wages for folks at the top have grown dramatically faster than for typical workers, and wages for folks at the bottom have actually fallen. As I said earlier, the federal minimum wage in the late 60s was around $10 an hour. Wages for low-paid workers in America today are about 24% lower than they were back in the late 60s. So raising the minimum wage is this one thing that's going to help reduce some of that inequality. Now, it's not going to be a cure-all, but it would certainly help for folks at the lower end of the wage scale.
Okay, if you've just joined us, my guest this first half hour, David Cooper, economic analyst with the Economic Policy Institute, 1-866-780-9100. We have a number of callers waiting. Let's move on to Angela Lamberts is with us of Iowa City, has come into our Iowa City studio, works in Iowa City, currently at ATC, the testing company. Angela Lamberts, welcome to our program.
Thank you for including me. Hello.
Hello. Now, you work at the best paying job you've had in your adult life.
Yes.
Currently at ATC, you're making
ACT. Yes.
ACT. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No worries.
I'm
making $30,000 a year.
Okay.
Full time.
Hourly
it's
wage.
It's hourly at ACT. Yes.
Okay, so something like $15 an hour.
It's about 15 hours.
Okay.
$15. Yep.
You've worked in that's more recent, but you've worked in lower wage. Tell us about some. A wage that you worked for where you found it really tough to get by.
Okay. During my undergraduate years at Iowa State University, I worked in food service and anywhere I could find a job part-time. I was going to school full-time, and at the time in the 90s, all I could get was minimum wage with no benefits at all. And so I was working up to 25 hours a week because of my schedule, and when I could work 40 hours a week overnights and going to school full-time, it was still minimum wage, and I didn't make enough to pay rent and buy food.
So what'd you do?
not very proud to say this. I stole food from my workplaces. I worked in food service, so there was food readily available there, and I didn't eat very much. And when I worked at a grocery store, during the overnights, they had specials on food that was damaged in the morning. The stock people would damage the packaging, and so I would get highly discounted food there. Uh-huh. So that's what I ate.
I thought you were going in the direction of dumpster diving.
I thought about it, but I didn't get to that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're out of that into a better
yes.
wage now.
Yes.
Have there
much.
Been times when you've had to rely on government assistance?
I have. I have been on the food stamp program twice. The first time was I was getting tired of stealing food from my work, and my ethics got the better of me, which was a good thing because I ate much healthier food. I was able to get vegetables and fruit and not processed food. The second time I was on food stamps for just a couple weeks, but the experience of showing my card to the cashier was too degrading, so I stopped.
Mm-hmm.
It was very shameful.
Mm-hmm. You're hearing the minimum wage debate gaining momentum now nationally, also here in Iowa. We'll talk with a Democratic senator later in the program who was behind a bill, some legislation here mm-hmm. in Iowa, failed mm-hmm. to raise the minimum wage in our state. What are your thoughts when you hear arguments against minimum wage raising it? For instance, that employers will then get rid of employees. They'll be more unemployed.
The minimum wage worker generally are the folks that make your food. They take your trash away. They do the basic infrastructure of our culture that we are so comfortable in. And if you take those wages away by not increasing them and then firing people, we're going to lose a whole lot of our basic comforts that we're getting used to. And also, if you fire those people, they won't have access to food or any public assistance because they're making zero. If they have some assistance, it's very limited. And so their sense of self and confidence will degrade.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying, you don't believe the fact that they'll shed these workers if it goes?
I hope not.
Okay.
No, hope not.
What can you say, David Cooper, as an economic analyst at the Economic Policy? This is the argument, is it not, that's brought up most often by Republicans mostly against raising the minimum wage?
Yeah, this is the thing that you hear every time any sort of minimum wage increase is discussed, that raising the minimum wage will kill jobs. And this is actually probably the most studied topic in labor economics. The reason why you hear that is because, you know, in the very rudimentary sort of Econ 101 textbook version of the economy, it says, you know, if you raise the price of something, including labor, then the demand for it will go down. So, you know, that would lead us to think that a minimum wage increase would kill jobs. And certainly some of the earliest research seemed to support that conclusion. But we've had so many minimum wage increases over the years, and in particular since the 1990s, there's been a ton of minimum wage increases at the state level. And what researchers started doing in the 1990s is to look at what happened along the borders of states where one state raised its minimum wage and the other state didn't. It gave them a really great natural experiment to see what the effect of that minimum wage increase was on the labor market. And what they found is that in the border counties in the states where the minimum wage went up, employment tended to actually go up relative to in the states where there was no minimum wage increase. Or in some cases it went down, but really not strong enough to have any effect. And so this is an experiment that's been repeated numerous times over the last two decades, and the best research we have at this point shows that increases in the minimum wage have little to no effect on overall employment levels.
Okay. 1-866-780-9100. We want to get to another guest, but let's slip in a caller now. This is Sylvia is joining us from Iowa City. Sylvia, I see on my screen that you are a business owner.
That's correct. We have a food business, and we have quite a bit of experience with hiring people who, are on the lower wage end of things. Now, I am very much against raising the minimum wage because this proposal for the increase, let's say it goes to $10 an hour, that's a huge, huge increase. Having said that I'm against it, I want to say that we start our employees anywhere from $9 to $12 an hour. So we are not paying minimum wage. Now, so there's a lot of talk about wage equality, but the fact is the labor force of minimum wage people, there's no equality in the industriousness of their work. And because there's such a huge problem getting references on people anymore, nobody wants to give a bad reference because, you know, they're going to get sued. So you can find out virtually nothing about an employee's work habits before you employ them. You just kind of have to go with your gut. And we've had so many strange things happen where people try to get fired so they can collect unemployment after just working a couple of weeks. And
Sylvia, in the interest of time, we're running out of a little time. Answer this question, though. We just raised it. Raising the minimum wage, would that make you as a business owner shed workers?
You know, we'd certainly have to think about it because let's say the minimum wage is raised to $10, we'd have to raise our $10 workers to $12 because now they've got a level playing field with people who are far less skilled and less quality workers. And so it changes everything because every wage level will go up above the minimum wage people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sylvia. Thank you very much. We've got to move on. We've got a few minutes left in this segment. We thank you for your perspective. Sylvia from Iowa City. And let's go to Bridget Fagan, also joining our conversation, worker justice organizer at Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement in our Des Moines studio. Hello, Bridget.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What are you campaigning for?
Well, we're campaigning for a better workplace, really. Low-wage workers are dealt a whole host of issues right now in their workplace. And so we're working for a living wage. We're working to stop wage theft. We're working to regulate payroll debit cards. So we're really working for a better work environment.
Mm-hmm. A living wage. It all sort of different ways to get to that that goal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned wage theft. Remind us what that is and how common it is here in Iowa.
Wage theft is when an employee isn't paid for all or part of the work that they do. And so I've been at Iowa CCI since December of 2012, and I can tell you that every single day a person comes in with an issue of wage theft, every single day since I've been at CCI. Mm-hmm. And they say that it's about $600 million a year that is stolen from Iowa workers.
And what's the problem? Do we not have the laws there? Do we not have the enforcement?
The laws aren't strong enough, and at the workforce development, there's only 1.5 wage theft investigators for the entire state of Iowa. So they're just overwhelmed. They can't do the work. So we need to increase funding so we can have more workforce investigators, and we need to change the laws so we have some more regulation.
So with so few investigators working, the employers who do engage in wage theft have little to fear.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You had a challenge last September. Tell us about it. Living off $77 a week. Why?
Because I took this challenge. So did other folks at our office, and some other legislators took the challenge too. And it was really to experience, you know, for just a week, what workers experience, you know, all year throughout their entire lives. And most folks, they did not make it because things come up. Like one of the ladies that work with me, she had a furnace break. And so she was done the first day.
Right. And as we heard from Angela, when you're on a low wage, you'll resort to things you wouldn't otherwise in order to feed yourself, for instance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, what's the picture for immigrant populations working here in Iowa, perhaps working and living here illegally?
Well, like I said, you know, folks are dealing with a whole host of issues when you're working low-wage jobs, but immigrants are even more affected by wage theft and misclassification. I think there are some employers out there that take advantage of some of their employees who might not have documents. But no matter what, if you're documented or undocumented, you deserve to be paid for the work that you do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go quickly to a caller before we have to end this segment. Chrissy is with us from Iowa City. Chrissy, we've got a couple minutes. You might have your radio on in the background. I ask you to turn that down and let us know what's on your mind.
Hey, okay. I'm just calling because I have worked in a restaurant for 9 years now. I make $4.25 an hour, and I'm also a student. It's not enough money to survive on. Every day it's a struggle of what bills I'm going to pay, what can be late, you know, how far can I push it before I, you know, I'm in trouble, legal trouble for not paying my bills.
You get tips as well, though, right?
We get tips as well, but it's still not enough money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are your hopes for the minimum wage in the state and nationally?
I hope that the state will raise it to $15 an hour, and that if the state doesn't step up, that local government steps in and says it's time. We deserve this money.
Okay, Chrissy in Iowa City. We'll get back to callers later in the program. Thanks, Chrissy. So please stay on the line, the callers that we have. We'll try to get to as many as possible. Also, we have our social media on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. If you don't happen to get live on the air, make sure you go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Give us a little synopsis of your situation and your thoughts on this topic of minimum wage. Let me end with you, David Cooper. Let me throw this out to you. Certainly people thinking this, business owners, why not let the market determine wages? We trust the market to determine, for instance, the prices we pay for produce, any goods at a grocery store. Why not wages?
Well, you know, you have to remember that the market exists within the framework of the laws that we set for it. So, yes, the market, there are forces that determine wage levels, but we as a society can choose to set a floor under which the market can operate, and we've let that floor erode for decades. I mean, as I said before, in the late 60s, we chose as a society to have the market set wages between the levels of $10 and whatever the top wage was at that time. Mm-hmm. And over the last 40 years, we've basically as a society said, we're comfortable, we're okay with workers today getting paid less than they were 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. We could just change the rules so that the market operated in a slightly different way. And the research tells us that we could do that without having any real significant effect, any negative effect on businesses.
Okay, thank you, David Cooper. It's all the time we have for right now. We'll come back after a short break. Economic analyst at the Economic Policy Institute. David, thank you. And thanks to Angela Lamberts for coming in and telling us about your low-wage history.
Thank you.
And Bridget Fagan, worker justice organizer for Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. Thanks for coming into our Des Moines studio.
Thanks.
When we come back, after a short break, a conversation with Peter Orazum, a professor of economics at Iowa State University. We'll talk to him about the impact of raising Iowa's minimum wage. In the past, he studied it, what that would mean in the future. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we're kicking off our summer series on jobs called Iowa at Work. Our series continues Mondays throughout the month on both River to River and Talk of Iowa. Each hour we're looking at work in 2015 from a different perspective. This hour we're talking about the minimum wage, talking with people who work for minimum wage or close to it, and talking about efforts to raise the minimum wage. My next guest is someone who has studied minimum wage in the past. Peter Orazum is with us, professor of economics at Iowa State University. Peter, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
I wonder if you can start off by telling us about your study from 2002 that was published in the Journal of Labor Research. I understand you analyzed the impact of Iowa's minimum wage then.
Right. So Iowa actually had a short period of time where we had a higher minimum wage than all the states surrounding us. And that happened sort of in a curious way. The Iowa legislature was told that the federal government was going to be raising the minimum wage later in the year, so they decided that they wanted to raise the minimum wage to the same level 4 months earlier, and then they guessed high. And so for the next 3 or 4 years, Iowa had a higher minimum wage than Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, states that typically have higher average wages than Iowa.
Mm-hmm. And so when you studied that, what did you find happened?
Well, there was a small reduction in jobs for people who previously had been paid less than the new minimum wage. And so what we tried to do was to isolate the individuals whose wages rose directly as a result of the minimum wage, and we followed their earnings along. What we found out was maybe a small, less than 1% reduction in employment, but a reduction in hours. And so, in fact, the average earnings for the people whose wages rose as a result of the minimum wage, the average earnings for that group fell. And so the primary mechanism was that firms that had higher wages mandated by the Iowa law ended up cutting back on how many hours they were open.
Does that give us insight into what many employers thought about at that time, why they reacted in that way?
Well, I think that for the most part, you know, small increases in the minimum wage aren't going to affect employers very much unless they're fairly small employers and employers that are more on the margin. And so those employers are going to be most sensitive to increases in their labor costs. And so not all firms are going to be affected, but the smaller firms, the more marginal firms will be.
Based on those findings and your other work in this area, can you predict what impact raising the minimum wage now would have, let's say to $10 an hour?
Well, most states, 29 states now have minimum wages that are above the federal level. So if the federal government raised their minimum wage to $10, in those states, the increase would be much less than it would be in Iowa. But even here in Iowa, there's a very small fraction of workers who are actually paid the minimum wage. And so it may be around 1%. In fact, there are more people paid less than the minimum wage than there are people paid at the minimum wage.
Because they're excluded somehow.
Because they're exempt, right. So if you're working at, say, an amusement park in the summer, for whatever reason, you're exempt from having to pay the minimum wage to those workers. And so the effect for sort of modest increases in the minimum wage right now are likely to be negligible. If you increase it to $15 an hour, say, as they have in Seattle or Los Angeles, the effect would be much more extreme.
Mm-hmm. What would be, for instance, the impact on workers, as to your previous study, if you raise it by, say, $12 by 2020, as the proposal from the Democrats in Washington has it? The impact on workers would be that they would get more of a living wage or not?
Well, probably the consensus estimate is that for every 10% increase in the minimum wage, you lose about 1% to 3% of employment, with most of the estimates closer to the 1%. So if you went from $7.25 to $12, that's quite a few 10 percentages, right? And so that effect is going to be much larger than it would be if they stopped at $10. A lot of it depends on what the previous wages were. So the effect in Iowa that has a $7.25 minimum wage is likely to be larger than it would be in some of the states that already have higher minimum wages.
So it sounds like you can fairly accurately predict in Iowa how much it would raise unemployment.
I think we would have a pretty good guess that we would lose on the order of 4 or 5% in terms of low-wage employment as a result of an increase to $12, certainly if they did it over a very short period of time.
What about the bigger picture on the economy? What type of effect does varying degrees of raising the minimum wage have on an economy as a whole, Iowa or the nation?
Well, the national increases in minimum wage have tended to basically validate already existing minimums, right? So very few people now in the U.S. are paid $7.25 or less. And in the past, when we've raised the minimum wage, it's tended to be where prevailing wages for low-skill workers are already above that. And so the effects tend to be relatively modest. So where we're going to get more dramatic effects at the national level are going to be, you know, if we start increasing the minimum wage significantly above the current level. And so at $12 an hour, you're going to have a much larger effect than you would at $10 an hour. But generally, I mean, if you're going to have the largest effects, it's going to be where you raise the minimum wage in one state when all the neighboring states are at a lower level, as Iowa was in the mid-1990s, and that's where you get the more large negative effects.
Mm-hmm.
Are there measures, Peter, that might be more effective at the goal of helping people earn a living wage?
Well, certainly if you use something that subsidizes employment of low-wage workers, those are much more effective and they tend to be much better targeted. And so the earned income tax credit, for example, number one, it's targeted at low-wage workers. You only get the benefits if you're in if your overall income is relatively low. So if you're a minimum wage worker in a high-income family, you don't get the benefit. So the targeting for the earned income tax credit is very good, meaning that the benefits primarily go to the targeted population. On the other hand, when they look at the minimum wage, you have almost the same number of people in the higher decile of income who benefit from the minimum wage as you do from the lowest decile of income, because a disproportionate share of the people who are benefiting from the minimum wage are going to be teenage or relatively young workers, and they tend to be distributed broadly across all income deciles.
Mm-hmm. And I wondered if Peter, you could have a comment on President Obama's announcement last week, a change in labor rules which would extend overtime benefits to an estimated 5 million people nationwide. The proposed changes would more than double the salary threshold for overtime eligibility to $970 a week in 2016. So this means employees earning a yearly salary of about $50,000 or less automatically would be eligible for overtime pay. It seems like it's related to some of the work you're done. Do you have a reaction to this move based on your work?
Yeah, there are quite a few studies that have looked at overtime premia. The current income level, I think, just a little bit north of $23,000 was from 1975, I think. It was a long time ago. And so the idea is to raise it to $50,000 or around $50,000, which is where it would have been if the threshold had been indexed to inflation. And the nice aspect of this is that over time, firms have tried to define jobs so they were exempt from the overtime premia. And so a lot of the debate has been on, okay, should we extend the overtime requirements to other jobs? This one doesn't extend it to other occupations. It just simply changes the minimum income. So it's a much more elegant way of adapting or extending the benefit to more people. And they're going to tend to be individuals who are not going to be sensitive to small changes in their wages because they're already paid a fair amount, right? $50,000 is higher than the average starting salary for a college graduate. Mm-hmm. And so it's unlikely you're going to have the negative employment effects. Now, the studies of overtime premia suggest that firms do, in fact, adjust their hours. And so if you have to suddenly start paying extra for hours beyond 40, then you're going to tend to stop using overtime as a mechanism to get production done, and you may end up hiring more people, which is the unstated alternative reason for doing this, and that is that you may increase the number of people who are employed as a result of making it more expensive to use overtime as a means of meeting your production goals.
Okay. Peter Erazem, professor of economics at Iowa State University, thank you for your view on the minimum wage.
Well, thank you.
We're kicking off our summer series this Monday. Iowa at Work, our summer series through the month of July. This hour, examining minimum wage. We have a few minutes left to examine legislative efforts that have been happening in Iowa right now in the past session, either to keep the status quo or raise the minimum wage. And let's welcome Iowa Senator Tony Bisignano is a Democrat from District 17, the Des Moines area. Senator Bisignano, welcome to our program and our Des Moines studio.
Thank you.
By phone, we have Craig Walter joining us, Executive Vice President for the Iowa Lodging Association. He's also a lobbyist for the Iowa Restaurant Association. Craig Walter, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And I want to mention here before we get the perspectives of these two gentlemen that Republican lawmakers declined to come on this program to talk about minimum wage. I just want to throw that out there. It's not that we didn't try.
The GOP lawmakers in this state did not want to engage in this conversation in our program. Let's talk to you, Senator Bisignano. Tell us about the legislation that was considered this past session and ultimately did not pass.
Well, the Senate tried to take a position below what we really felt was necessary in raising the minimum wage to $8.75 in 2 years. We know that's not adequate, and that wasn't where we wanted to be. But we wanted to put it at a reasonable level to engage the Republicans to support the minimum wage. And we miscalculated because they chose not to even bring it up for discussion.
Mm-hmm. Was there not a compromise to be had?
Well, I don't know how much more you can compromise on $8.75 over 2 years. I think that is the ultimate compromise. Originally, the discussion was $10.10, but we set it at what we felt was a very reasonable rate, and we only did that because we had to compromise. And so I don't know if there's any purpose of passing any minimum wage increase that would be below $8.75 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Let me give you some of the words as put out by the Quad City Times by Speaker Craig Paulson, Republican majority leader, when asked about opposition to raising Iowa's minimum wage. Here's what he had to say. I'd like to react to it. House Republicans are interested in creating an environment where employers can hire people at wages they can actually raise a family on. Raising the minimum wage wouldn't achieve that. It would hurt some low-wage workers who would lose their jobs.
Well, to me, that's a gratuitous statement, because it's saying that, you know, I think people ought to make $15 or $20 an hour. And in fact, if they can't make $15 or $20 an hour, let's leave them at $7.25. And the argument, of course, we all want to increase wages in Iowa. The governor committed to raise family income 25%, which he has sorely missed so far in his term. But one of the ways to increase income would be to raise the minimum wage. It was a very softball to reach that goal, but he chose not to engage as far as encouraging the Republicans, and therefore Iowa, which used to be a leader, is now behind all other states in the Midwest.
Craig Walter, you're executive vice president for the Iowa Lodging Association. What is and you also represent the Iowa Restaurant Association. What is the restaurant industry's stance on minimum wage in this debate?
Well, it has been, and I should let me preface that with Senator Bisignano has done an outstanding job, and I appreciate him coming to the table for discussion on something like this. It's a matter that we primarily looked at the $10.10 wage issue that was thrown out there earlier in the session, because that $10.10 would have been a 40% increase from the $7.25 we have now. In the industry, the restaurant or the lodging industry, you know, the minimum wage, I think we've looked at it as a starting wage. It's made up of new employees that are trained or need training at the start. Over half of them are teenagers or young adults. And, you know, better than almost two-thirds of those are folks that work 35 hours or less. And I can speak for the hotel industry throughout Iowa without a doubt. I don't know of anybody currently that we are hiring at $7.25. And the reason for that is that it's market conditions. It's the competition for the workers that are out there today is very, very intense. And once we get a worker, we want to keep them. And so we look at that worker and we pay them on the position, on the experience they have, and probably the performance that they're going to have for us. So we understand that, you know, when you increase wages, it's going to have some type of an impact on us. Now, whether it would reduce employment, reduce the number of hours that the people are working, cut services, say, or maybe a price increase to the customer that we have out there, or even possibly reduce the income for those companies that are paying for the increase, it will have an effect, whether it's 50 cents or 40% increase or whatever the case might be. You know, I guess we have some certain concerns across the country that we've witnessed in the last probably 6 to 9 months with Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco pushing the minimum wage to $15 an hour. That is just not sustainable to go to some type of level like that. And that's a concern because that's the living wage that those areas are pushing for.
They certainly have a higher cost of living as well in those large cities.
They certainly do. Mm-hmm. And like I say, in the lodging industry, I know that we can't find anybody. If you don't come in at $850, $875 sometimes, I wouldn't be surprised today for starting wages, and I would say that's back room or keeping.
Let me get you both to react to this. This is Casey posting on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. The only reason that minimum wage workers make $7.25 is that there's a law saying they can't be paid any less. When it's legal to pay people such low wages, a lot of them are going to require government assistance. If we raise the minimum wage, fewer people will need food stamps, which will raise taxpayer money and make people more self-reliant. Now, you're saying, Craig Walter, that a lot of the people in the hotel industry are not paid $7.25, but even in the $8 to $9 region, I imagine government assistance would probably be needed. What do you think about that argument, that actually, you know, paying a low wage is just pushing it off onto the government so the government can provide some extra assistance?
Well, I don't think that's the intent of any of the hoteliers that I know. We're paying for market conditions out there, and you could say minimum wage would be $5 an hour. There isn't anybody that's going to work in my respective industries for that type of money.
Okay. Senator Bisignano, we have very brief amount of time left. What about this? Market conditions, as Craig Walter is saying, hey, you know, we wouldn't pay $7.25 because we can't.
Well, first of all, we subsidize the largest employer in the United States, the government across the board, is Walmart. And they qualify for most social benefits that the government provides. But let's get to the real point of the minimum wage debate. And that is the people, the vast majority, over majority, 58%, are women. And then there are women with children. And so we're keeping – it's women that we're keeping in poverty, single mothers who are taking the brunt of the breakup or the abandonment by the father, probably not paying child support. And so when we really look inside the bubble and see who it is, they're children. One out of four kids live in poverty. And when we talk about, kids, entry-level jobs, you know, I represent a district that's working poor. And I can tell you, athletic participation and after-hour curricular activities are shortchanged because these kids have to work. They're not going to work to go buy a pair of Nikes or get ready for spring break. They're also supporting the single mother that they live with or a younger sibling. And so in reality, let's just look at what we're talking about when we're talking about raising an income from $7.25 to $9 an hour. We know the market's going to drive employment because you can't get people at that lower wage.
Okay. We have just a minute or so left. I want to share an email, and then Senator Bisignano, I want to have you look forward to see what you plan for the next session on this front. This is an email from John, a listener we have in Illinois. My wife, who works as a paralegal, was telling me how a coworker was being reprimanded for a mistake. The employer told her, "You have to use your brain for this type of work, which is why I pay you more than someone who mows lawns for a living." The irony was that her husband mows lawns for a living and earns more than his paralegal wife. Many employers are out of touch with what a good wage and what it takes for those of us to make it on our shoestring budget. We don't mind paying dues and working hard, but we have to survive in the meantime. That email from John in Illinois. We have a few seconds for you, Senator Bisignano. What do you have as a strategy in the future to raise the minimum wage?
Well, I'm not going to back up. I'm going to come in and stack up. I think we're going to go and I'm going to propose as Labor Committee Chair higher than $8.75. I want to vote in the Iowa House. I want the Republicans to vote on the minimum wage. And I served before in 89 when the minimum wage was passed. And legislators lost elections because they voted no against the minimum wage. I want to bring it up again along with these other issues that Bridget mentioned earlier, wage theft, payroll debit cards. It's time to stop waging war on poor people in the state. And I intend to, as Labor Chair and as majority party, to fight for the working people.
Okay, thank you very much. Iowa Senator Tony Bisignano, a Democrat from the Des Moines area. Craig Walter, we want to thank you as well, Senator. And Craig Walter, thank you for joining us this half hour.
Thank you.
Once again, to mention that any Republican lawmakers declined to come on this program and talk about minimum wage. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon in Des Moines. We had help from John Pemble. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.